I wouldn't trade being a mom for the world, but it's also a full-time job. And that means sometimes I get less sleep than I'd like. So I make the most of the hours of sleep I do get with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature-regulating technology that adapts to your body's needs through all phases of motherhood. And they use only the very best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. I have the king sheets for my bed, the entire set, and I swear to you, it's like you can't wait to get in and you never want to get out. If you're a commitment phobe, that's totally fine because Cozy Earth stands by the quality and longevity of their products, so much so that you can enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. And just for our listeners, Cozy Earth has an exclusive Mother's Day offer. Use the code Jillian for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. That's CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth, built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
You're already cackling.
No, I'm,
what's
it's just the temperature's kind of funky in here.
I
today.
Know it's always friggin' Arctic in here. Now I'm dressed like a bloody Eskimo, well, and I come in and it's 77. I feel like I'm going through menopause.
I know.
It's like
just
a cruel joke.
I'm straight out of a Pendleton ad. I mean, good God. Anyway,
what's happening?
I don't know. Jake did something.
What is wrong with the thing?
We're going down now. It's going down.
Yeah, it is going down.
Thank God. I mean, it's just like sweating over here. My hair's matted down to my forehead.
When are you going through menopause? Not for a while
yet. I hope not.
Yeah, you have a birthday coming up, do you not?
Shh.
Oh, sorry. I know it's February.
Nope.
It is so.
No.
You have a birthday in February.
No.
February.
Nope.
Yes, you do.
No,
I'm
going to
find out. Brittany's not here yet.
Did you not have a segment that you wanted to do?
Oh, yeah. Oh, now. Well, I wanted to tell you. Now, you know, we a while back, we talked about me maybe asking people over for tea.
Yes.
And stuff. Now, I haven't asked anybody over for tea yet.
So we've made no progress.
No, but I did. No, I did. I put myself out to someone.
Oh.
And I said,
who? A love interest?
Kind.
Woo!
Well, no, I can't say love. It's not. But what it is
a romantical situation.
I said, is this relationship that we have, is it going to go any further? Do you see it going any further? Maybe into more of a physical, possibly into a physical realm.
Oh, good for you.
And I was told, I'm just not attracted to you. I just don't want to have sex with you. And I kind of went, first of all, there was a throw up burp and it was like,
that's like your worst nightmare. I'm going to tell you why this is good for you later though, but go on.
Okay. So I kind of went, first of all, I went, whoa, that's tough news. And then it kind of went, it kind of went on to like, and then your brain starts going 100 miles an hour. Your brain starts going, wait a minute, I'm not a bad package. I got it. I'm not a bad package. You know what I mean? You look at yourself as your package as a whole. You know,
good for you.
The conversation went on. You know, it was more like, you know, I'm just not interested. Why don't you understand that? It was almost, and it got to a point where it started getting a little bit mean. Like it went from being honest, which I don't really know if that's truly the honesty. You know, you got to look at the other person,
right,
where the honesty is coming from. It's honest to like, oh, you know what? You could stop any time now.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you could kind of put the brakes on this. I got it.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid. But then you kind of, and I talked to my shrink and she said, you know, honesty cannot be used as a weapon. It almost becomes a little bit borders on, not abuse. It's not abuse, but it can be. You know, because you know.
It's funny you say that. I hear you. I've always talked about, like, okay, I do think there are times where you can lie. Where there's just no, you know, if something's a foregone conclusion, like if your friend is standing in front of you and you haven't seen their wedding dress, right? And they're in their wedding dress and they're about to walk down the aisle and you hate the dress and they go, what do you think? You don't go, oh God, you know, I don't like that dress. Now when there's nothing to be fixed about it, that's when you go, you look beautiful. Like, because why not? And if, for example, let's say you're not attracted to somebody, then you say, you know something, I care about you. I'm not sure that I feel that way. But I care about you very much. And it could stop there. You're right. Honesty at times, and I talked to my shrink about why is it so hard to be honest? And he goes, it's so confrontational. At times it makes it hard for people to get along. And so people kind of lie or pretend, and there's a fine line. And again, in life, it's like you shouldn't lie all the time, but you don't have to be brutally honest. And this is where life is gray. It's like be authentic, be truthful. If you're not in it, then it's like, you know, I'm just not there. Okay. But again, it's like what you're saying. And then it sounds like she was having some sort of historical projection against you.
I think so, too. I totally agree. I think that's what I mean. Where's this honesty coming from?
Right.
You know, when it becomes like a projection.
Why don't you get it? I mean, that sounds like a conversation that she's having with somebody else. Does that make any sense? Like when people have, like my contestants have conversations with me.
Yeah, that does make sense.
And they'll say like, you know, it's never good enough for you. And I'm going, well, that's not true. Like today it wasn't good enough for me. And then I realize I'm like, oh, you're having this conversation with your mom or your dad. And you're projecting that onto me. So like when she says, don't you get it? Sounds a lot to me like that's a historical conversation, a conversation that this person is having with somebody from their past.
But it's interesting when you say it's a very gray area because I have used that kind of thing to gain the affection of somebody. So I have used dishonesty. So when you turn it into honesty, I'm not making sense now.
Yeah, no, I know. You lie. Like, you look gorgeous. Or you're great.
Yeah,
because
I love you. You know, I mean, who hasn't said I love you just to possibly...
I have the golden rule. Here's what it is. You should be authentic and always set out to never do harm with your words. That means to yourself first. So if you're saying something to somebody that isn't in your authentic truth and it's harming you... Like my dad used to tell me things as a kid, right, that were totally inappropriate because it was a very strange relationship and he wanted my sort of approval and for me to think he was this great guy. But it was like really inappropriate, gross stuff about his dating life and his past. You can see why I don't like my dad. So really, and I'm 13 years old, right, and I'm going, wow, Dad, that's so good for you. Wow, you're so cool. Good for you. Because I want my dad to love me. Mm-hmm. So I want him to feel the way he needs to feel, which is like he's this big studly guy, right? But inside I'm sick. I'm physically sick and I feel sick and I feel gross and I secretly hate him. So I didn't tell the truth in that moment and it was harmful to me. Oh. Now, with that said, if someone's about to walk down the aisle and I say, I like your bridal gown, does that hurt me? No. But if I'm like, yeah, I don't like it, like, it hurts her. So I think the agenda here is try to do no harm with your words while being as authentic as possible. So if you're not going to hurt yourself by saying to somebody, you know what, you do look great in that dress or what have you. I think that there's the line there. Now, if she's buying the dress and you go, you know, I like it, but I don't love it. You can say that instead of, my God, it really highlights your love handles. No. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. And
That's where honesty's a weapon. If you say, oh, God, you really see your love handles in that, and it really, it accentuates, you can see your cellulite through that fabric. Here's what you say. I don't love that one. I'm not sure what it is. Can you try on a few more? Then you've been, you see where, there's the gray area. And as long as it's do no harm with your words. So it sounds like, though, here's the next question. So I have a couple of things about this that kind of stray from your honesty point. Number one, why have you attracted somebody that has the ability to be mean and harsh like that? Because I promise you, this is not like a new thing in this person. It's obviously something that's historical for them. And it plays out a pattern for you. So, like, why is it that you'd set yourself up for that when it's your worst nightmare?
True. And you just hit the nail on the head, is that when you're going to ask a vulnerable question like that, be prepared for, you have to be prepared for the answer. I'm not saying you have to be prepared for particularly that answer. If you're going to ask a question, sometimes you almost know the answer. I'm going to way many topics. You ask me a question, I haven't answered it yet. I've evaded it completely.
Yeah.
Why have I attracted people? Why do I keep attracting people in my life where
they're going to make you feel rejected and less than, which is, by the way, your worst nightmare. So you're playing out a pattern over and over and over again, looking for that that unhappy human being to suddenly be happy with you.
True. No, you're absolutely right. And this is a pattern. You're right. So I have to break the pattern.
Yeah, and you know how you do it? You stop attracting people like that.
What if those are the only people that are slightly attracted to you, though? What if that's the only type of person who is attracted to me?
Nope. Well, it's the only person that you are attracted to. You just don't see it. So for you, you're playing out this historical pattern of... You know, like, you don't want anyone to come over because the house has to be perfect. So it's never going to be perfect, as you know, so nobody ever comes over. So you constantly play out this pattern of not being perfect enough or not being good enough and attracting people who are going to tell you that, even though she's, or this person is projecting her own sort of like, I don't like you
there's a great love of friendship. There's no doubt about it. There's a great love of friendship, but to go beyond it, I was thinking it was going beyond it. And so I broached it.
But then it was like, it turned mean. So what I'm saying is, if there was a great friendship there, it wouldn't have turned mean. It could have been gentle. You broached it for the first time. So where's the, don't you get it?
I think it's, you know what? I have to take some responsibility. This is the second time I broached it in a year.
Okay.
The first time I heard it, but then I thought things were changing, so I approached it again.
Okay, and that's understandable, but it's not, don't you get it, is aggressive. You're right, and then you can stop any time now. Is what you're saying is, this is somebody who is, you've set yourself up for rejection.
I have.
Okay, but Bud, that's because you are hoping that over the course of the year, you can become perfect enough or interesting enough or exciting enough to change her mind. But what you don't get is that she is who she is. She's not going to change her mind. So what has to change is you. Stop trying to be what she needs to change, or stop trying to be enough for her to change. It's like the woman that thinks she can be good enough for the man to stop cheating, or, you know, the woman that thinks, like, you know, they have their own reasons for doing what they do. And if you think you can be enough to turn them around, that's your issue, Janice. You're always trying to be enough. And if you're enough to change that dissatisfied person, you've won this epic historical battle. But that's why you're playing out this pattern. But the only way to truly win it is for you to go, okay, I'm setting myself up for rejection here. This is not a safe place for me to feel loved or held. I'm moving on in this facet and attracting somebody else. And when you get to that headspace, you will find that person. I promise you. I always thought, like, oh my God, I'm going to keep attracting, like, same person, and like, again and again and again, and no one's out there. And, you know, and then one day I met Heidi, couldn't be more different than everybody else I've ever dated. And it's because I was ready at that time. I was ready.
Did you doubt it? Did you doubt that this could ever be something because it was so different?
You know, we both wanted to be single. That's what's so funny, is that we met as friends and grew into a friendship because we, you know, didn't hit it off right away. Ended up becoming friends. And then even when it was like, okay, Well, now there's an attraction. Well, maybe it should be Friends with Benefits. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like, well, this is good because I've never been able to do that, actually.
True.
I've never been able to do the whole Friends with Benefits thing. I get if I'm you know,
with someone,
I get attached to them. So I was like, this is great. I don't want a relationship for the first time. Like, I feel really good in, like, good space. I don't want to date. I don't want to take care of anybody. You know, this is really good. Okay, great. Let's be friends with benefit. Cut to, you know, we have two kids and we've been together 4 years. So, but the thing of it is, she felt the same way. She's like, no, I've been in relationships and I don't, you know, I'm not looking for a relationship right now. I don't want to take care of anybody. Same conversation. But my point is that when you start realizing that you're enough and you're good enough, you'll start attracting people who make you feel that way. But you're not interested in that dynamic because you don't get to fix this pattern. You don't get to heal this old wound. If they like you, you're like, oh, you know, that's no, I can't. No, I'm not drawn to that fire.
God, let's hope. You know what? You know what I really hope? I hope I don't go to my grave. And I know there's a lot of people.
I hope
we all don't go to our grave with these unchanging patterns. Like, that's a tough...
Here's how they change. Someone asked me this question the other day at dinner, and it was about Loser. And, like, what it requires to get these guys to sort of catalyze and move mm-hmm. through their change. So, on Loser, right, they develop obesity and all of these defense mechanisms and these coping mechanisms as a way to survive psychically over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for example, I've got this teenager, Sunny, and she's put on all this weight. Her mother wants her to be a doctor. She has no desire in being a doctor. They've told her, we've moved from India here for you to be a doctor. We've given up everything for you to be a doctor. Like, you better be a doctor. So what she does is she puts on all this weight, right? And she says, like, oh, I can't be what I want to be, Jill. I can't sing. I can't do art. I can't be outgoing because I'm fat. And I was like, no, girl. You put the weight on so you can blame the weight instead of being afraid that your parents will be so devastated and disapprove and pull away from you and withdraw. And you don't want to be angry at them about that, so you blame it on the weight. So she has psychically survived that her fear of her parents not loving her and subsequently her hating her parents for her not pursuing what she wants. That's what the weight is doing. It's allowed her to psychically manage all of those emotions up until this point. So we all hold on to these patterns, right? These dysfunctional patterns, because we've developed them over the years as defense mechanisms and coping mechanisms to manage one thing or another in our lives. So letting go of it is so terrifying. One of the ways that you can, or what will catalyze you to let go, is when your current situation is more painful than your fear of change or your vulnerability of letting it go.
Yeah.
So, for example, if somebody's in AA, right? Well, they wake up with seven sailors and they go, oh, my God, what the hell am I doing? And that living that life is now more painful than the fear of facing down why you're drinking and how hard it is to change and how hard it is to be sober and how hard it is to deal with those emotions. So what has to happen, Jay, is the feeling of loneliness and the feeling of not being good enough has to become so bloody dissatisfying that you will reach out and continue to make yourself vulnerable. So the one thing I like about this is that, A, you made yourself vulnerable, and my other favorite part about it is that you took the worst shot you could possibly take. So now we've eliminated all the fear.
It's a pretty big
shot. I'm like, there you go. You took a shot. You took a punch. It's your worst fear. Like, you won't be able to survive the rejection. It'll validate all your worst concerns about yourself. How will you survive if you go out on a limb and take a risk? Well, now you've taken the hit, and you're still standing, and you're still lovable, and you've turned around and gone, wait a minute. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's you. Which is one of the best things that you could possibly do. So my hope is that you'll go, all right, I can take another shot again because I've taken one before and I live to tell. So you will allow yourself to be vulnerable. Now, the key here is not repeating the same pattern. So when you see somebody that isn't receptive or has their own issues, don't try to change them.
You're right.
Move on.
Yeah,
don't try to win them over. Because in your mind, you're like, when I've won them over, I'll finally be good enough. Oh, good enough to have people over to the house for tea. Good enough to do you
that
see
goddamn tea.
Do you understand what
I
I'm
do,
saying?
I do. I laugh,
so
but I do.
The
understand.
Key is that when you go, okay, here's the change, you see that in somebody, so you don't make yourself vulnerable with them. And when you find the person that actually is receptive and you are intrigued by that person that's intrigued by you, that's when you've got progress. And that's where you exercise your vulnerability, which is also extremely hard, no matter who you're dealing with.
Yeah. Wow. Hmm. What, Jake?
I was sitting here quiet this whole time.
I know, you've been very quiet.
Those last 2 minutes, that applies so much to my life. I always go for... I can't even remember the last time I went for a girl that was instantly receptive. It was always, oh, I have to, you know, work a little at it. And I've been disappointed for the last year in girls, and it's always because I went for the ones that weren't receptive at first, and then they had their problems and stuff, and I always... It's not that I tried to fix their problems.
Sure, you tried to be their hero save their day.
It was
and
more like they weren't receptive to me, and I tried to fix that.
Well, you try to fix that, and then you probably try to fix that by being their hero or, like, being the great guy or being all those things. And, you know, but, honey, we all do that. So it's like on some level, okay, I was in a relationship for 7 years. Granted, let me tell you that I got into it when I was 20 and left it when I was 27. And the relationship was with someone that was very much like my father, who was an alcoholic and a drug addict and... Oh my God, charismatic, funny, attractive. And so it was like, and all borderline personalities are usually like extremely charismatic. So I spent that entire relationship trying to be enough, trying to get this person not to cheat on me, trying to get this person to be proud of me, and it finally at 27, you know what happened? I had gotten so sick of it, so sick of being cheated on, so sick of being lied to, so sick of being humiliated. But it breaks you down. If you stay too long, then you really start to believe it. I was like, well, I'm unlovable. Well, I'm a loser. Well, I'm all these things. I ended up having somebody like come on to me and tell me how great I was. And I was like, wait a minute. Really? And you're good looking and you're smart and you're funny. And it got me to leave after all of those years. But I had been sort of packing up the relationship along the way. But the thing is, honey, so yes, you're like, and I have subsequently at other times begun to date people like that. And the minute I feel shade or games or like, that's when I'm like, ooh, no, 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 no. And I go the other way. But in trying to make that person of 7 years, in trying to be enough for that person to not cheat, to not drink, to not do drugs, to be proud of me, that was me trying to be enough for my dad to be healthy, to be better, to be the dad I wanted him to be. So that was the pattern I was trying to fix. Does that make sense? So... you've got to look at, like, what is this pattern? What is this wound that you're trying to heal by repeating it? And it starts to get better when you recognize it and move in the other direction.
Okay. I think this is a good moment for R. Kelly.
No, you know he peed on a 17-year-old girl, right? I don't think we should endorse that.
No.
I Believe I Can Fly Again?
Yes.
Number one, I hate that song. And number two, he's a very controversial character.
Okay.
Can you pick something else? I'll even take Enya. Anything else? I mean, really.
Okay. We'll find something.
My computer will break if I mix Enya into one of our shows one more time.
I agree. I know. All right.
We'll find something else.
Jeez.
We'll be back.
Maybe Sarah McLachlan. Remember when Janet said she likes to have sex with Sarah
Stop.
McLachlan? Remember how awful that was? God, that was a bad day.
Dido.
Yeah. Whoa.
Dido! That's who we're going to play now.
No.
Come on, Dido. Sing it for us. So, hey, we are back, and Deanna is waiting to talk to you.
Hey, Deanna, what's going on?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a nervous wreck because I'm talking to you, but all is good.
Oh, don't be.
My question is, I have a 16-year-old daughter who struggles with her weight, and it's something that we've been dealing with for a while. And at this point, my husband and I, it's almost anything that we say or do, it's almost like falling on deaf ears. And we're just trying to figure out a way to get through to her because she doesn't feel like she is worth the effort to try to either lose weight or to be better than what she is. So I'm really just looking for what can I do or what can I say to reach her, to get to her. Her and I have an excellent relationship, and we pretty much can talk about anything.
Okay. Okay. This is never an easy conversation. All right. Let's see here. What's coming to me first? Number one, how is your health?
My health, I'm 5'5", about 155 pounds. I eat pretty well. I exercise close to three days a week.
All right. So you're in decent shape.
Yeah. I mean, I do try to watch what I eat. I do try to exercise. I try to be a good example.
Okay.
For her, we don't eat out a lot. Okay. I make her a breakfast every morning. I make her a lunch, a sensible lunch, and we usually eat dinner at home as a family.
Okay. Other siblings?
Yes, I
have. Fit or not?
She has a younger brother, and we also have a younger. She also has a younger sister, and the younger sister is adopted.
And
what comes with the adoption is her name is she has come from Africa, she is gorgeous. She's beautiful, and she gets a lot of attention.
Okay.
And we've had her for 2 years.
Mm.
She's we got her when she was 7.5, and she's 9.5 now.
Wow.
And my other two kids are in the shadows of of her.
It's so interesting. I've heard that before, but, like, I don't really see it. And this is not answering your question. I don't really see it in my own life just simply because the kids are so different. So, you know, there's Phoenix, and he's a boy, and he's the baby. And then there's Lou, and then she's adopted. So they both kind of have their very separate. It's almost like I kind of joke because I'm like, I don't understand how I could pick a favorite. It's almost like asking me, like, do you prefer sushi or do you prefer chocolate? It's like, I love them both. They're so different. So, but this is interesting because I have heard this before. Okay. So go on.
So anyway, her brother is, his health is fine. I mean, he's a boy. He's very active. He plays a lot of sports. And Olivia's in, she's in great shape.
Okay.
But my oldest, she does not like to exercise. She does not like to move. She does like to dance in her room.
Cute. I love it. All right. Okay. So hold on. Has she ever expressed to you that she wants to lose weight?
Yes.
She has?
Yes.
Is it because she thinks it's what you want to hear, or has she bared her soul and said, I hate being overweight, the kids pick on me, please help me, Mom?
Not so much in those words, but she has said that she wants to have a healthier lifestyle.
In a conversation prompted by you or by her?
I would say a little bit of both.
Uh-uh.
Probably more by me
there you
than
go.
By her.
Okay. So she's telling you what you want to hear.
And that's what I'm afraid of. And I think that's where I come up with the wall with her.
Yep. All right. We're going to have a slightly tougher conversation.
It's okay because I've already beat myself up. So it's
no,
okay.
I don't want you to beat yourself up. I'm not asking you to beat yourself up. That is your problem. You are beating that's the problem is that you're beating yourself up. Tell me why you're beating yourself up.
Because she's a child and I'm the adult.
Right. So what, you feel like you failed her?
Yes.
Okay. So let me tell you exactly what's happening here. She's walking around and you feel like she is a big shining example of your failure as a parent.
which makes you feel like crap.
Yeah.
So you want to fix it because you don't like how it makes you feel. It makes you feel like you're a failure and like everybody thinks you're a failure and you look like you failed your kid and you don't care about her health and you don't take care of her. And it's the worst feeling in the world. Sounds like it's a pretty bad feeling to you. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay, bud. So now here's what happens. So you're like, I have to fix this. I've got to do whatever I can. How do I fix this? How do I fix this? Because you want this feeling to go away. And you don't want to feel like you fail your daughter. Here's how she's interpreting it. Olivia's her name?
The youngest one. No,
oh, no, I'm sorry. What's the name of the older one?
Allison.
So Allison is like, this is what Allison is experiencing from you. Allison needs to be fixed. Allison needs to be fixed. Allison is a problem. How do we fix Allison? How do I fix Allison? Allison, pay attention. Allison, let's broach this conversation. Allison, how do I help you change? Allison, if I get this dress, will she change? How do I fix Allison? Because to you, Allison is a reflection of all the parts of you that you're insecure about because you feel you failed her as a parent. Let me be clear. As parents, I'll speak for myself. As a parent, all I do all day long is feel insecure about all the things that I'm not good at. And I constantly look at other parents and I look at Heidi and wonder why I'm not good at the things Heidi's good at or why I'm not good at the things other parents are good at or like what's wrong with me or why am I not good at these things. And, you know, I try to change it, but I have intrinsic insecurities as a person and intrinsic insecurities as a parent. But when the kid is overweight, it gives you like it's a manifestation of. And then it feeds into your insecurities, even though it originally is not your fault. But now the problem is, the more you try to fix her, the more she feels like she needs to be fixed. And the more she's going to quietly resent and then subsequently rebel against you. So what needs to happen, as hard as this may be for you, is that you need to completely step out of this. And show her 100% unconditional love in this area. And it's like, I would go up to her and I would say, you know something, honey? I would have this conversation. I would say, I love you so much. You know, you're my world. You're my everything. I love you so much. And I just want to be really clear that if I've ever, you know, made you feel in a conversation about your weight like you had to change, you don't have to change. My concern is that I may have failed you or I may have not supported you properly. And that's what you're sensing from me when we, and she may just, you know, she's a teenager. I don't know how engaged she's going to be with you. She might sweep it under the rug or she might get it. But I promise you on whatever level she hears it, she will hear you. And if you're like, it makes me feel like I haven't supported you in the right way. And I realize that maybe the way to support you is to stop having this conversation. And I just want you to know that I love you no matter what. And if at any point you want my help, like I'm here to help you in whatever way that might be. Like if you want to take dance classes, let's take Zumba together. Or let's take a hip hop class together. If you want to go alone because you're a teenager, go alone. Or if you want to, you know, cook together. Or if you want to, you know, work out together. Or if you just want me to leave you alone about it, I'm going to do whatever you need me to do. I love you no matter what. And I just want you to know I'm here for you no matter what. And don't ever. Ever bring this up again, as hard as that may be for you. And when she's ready, and I don't know when that will be, by the way, it could be when she's 25, it could be when she's 30, it could be tomorrow. When she's ready, she will start making changes. And if she wants your help, she'll let you know.
Okay.
But the problem is, and I see this every single day and so many kids or subsequently adults that I work with, is that for the parents, it's a reflection of, oh my God, I failed you. And everybody sees that I failed you. I have to fix this. I have to do what I have to do to make it better for you. When the reality is that the kid hears it as, you don't love me the way I am. I'm a problem. You're embarrassed of me. And they go the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And the other piece of advice I would have given you is that you need to lead by example, but you are. So what we do with a family, it's like, if the kid is overweight, then the conversation is really simple of like the whole family is going to get healthy. It's not about you being overweight, the kid being overweight. It's the whole family is changing their ways. We as a family are getting healthy. If you already do that, you have it's way more about the her being sort of singled out and her being the chubby one and her being and like needing to fix her. And then that becomes her identity within the family structure. Change that story.
Okay.
And find a completely different ways to relate and engage and make none of them about her weight. And you're going to have to live with that. And you're going to need to know that you are a great mom, even if your kids don't reflect an exterior of perfection. That's life. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like I can't wait for my kids to, you know, I know they're going to grow up and, like, be completely different than what I thought or completely different than what I'd hoped or, you know, do things that I am like, oh, no, you know, that's going to happen. And I don't know. I'm trying to prepare myself for it now because I'm like, these are not narcissistic reflections of me. These are not like they're their own little people and I'll try to support them. And, you know, if you lead by example, it'd be one thing if you were taking her through McDonald's, then I'd rip you a new one. If you had you've got 2 year olds with symptoms and factors for heart disease. Well, I promise you it's not the 2 year old. It's the parents that's driving through McDonald's and thinking that it's not a big deal. With that said, this is not what you're dealing with. So just trust me, you're a good enough mom. And she's a good enough kid. And we all have our crosses to bear and our issues to resolve. Let her resolve it and know that you're a good enough mom. It's going to be okay. I promise.
Okay.
I know this is hard for you, but just try it.
No, it will be hard. The cool thing about her and I is that we do have a really close relationship. And we do talk about a lot of things. So for me to go in there and tell her, that I love her no matter what, it will be very easy for me to do. The hard part will be to not say anything more about, you know, exercising or anything like that. Or
I don't just want you to tell her you love her no matter what. I want you to take responsibility for why you're trying to change her.
Right, right.
I want you to tell her that it's because you feel like you have failed her. That you in some way haven't supported her. And you realize that that may not be the most helpful thing and that it has never been about her not being, you know, perfect and beautiful and lovely. It's always been about you feeling imperfect and like you weren't good enough for her.
Okay.
Trust me. Trust me. She may not get it, but she will get it. Unconsciously, she will get it. And you may have a teenager that will get it. I'm not sure because I don't know her. Trust me. You're telling her in this moment, it's not you, it's me. And so many kids internalize their parents' insecurities and take it on in their life, and it makes them insecure and what have you as they grow older. By you saying, in this moment, this is my insecurity, it's not because of you, I guarantee it will be so healing for her. And it's okay to feel insecure as a parent. We all do. It's the person that's brave enough to go, God, this is me. This is me feeling like I am a failure or not good enough. And this is about me. That's why I'm asking you, step away. When she's ready, she'll you'll know. And when she needs you, you've already left the door open for her to tell you how.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
You're going to be okay. I promise. Just try to trust me. And this is a long-term thing. It's not going to pay off tomorrow.
Yeah.
It might not even pay off until 10 years from now. But I swear on my life, this is the right course of action. I promise. This I know, like the back of my hand. I've seen it time and time again. I've trust me on this. I've lived it. I've seen it. I've spoken to family therapists about it. I've seen it put into practice. I've seen it go the opposite direction. Try to trust me on this one. This is the most concrete, solid advice I could ever provide you.
I will do that, and I will trust you. I mean, I've listened to you and I've watched you for a long time, so I feel comfortable. I feel very comfortable with what you're telling me. I think I knew probably in the back of my head that this is more of what it was.
Yeah.
So, just, you know, sometimes you need it. Outsider to tell you that.
Well, just remember that this outsider is in the same boat in a lot of different ways. So not only are you not alone, you're such a great mom in the fact that you can see it and you're willing to own it. And that's what makes you an exceptional parent.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, buddy. Have a great day.
Well, thank you, Jillian, so much. And thank you for the time, you know, that you've given me today to help me work through this. And, you know, I love listening to your podcast. You and Janice are hilarious. And
I'm hilarious. Janice just stands here. Let's be clear. Janice just stands here. We all have to tolerate it. But but thank you. Thank you very much.
I love it, and I love watching you on TV again. So I'm glad you're on back on The Biggest Loser. So
thank you, buddy.
Thank you for what you do.
Mom, thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
Bye, Deanna. Bye-bye.
I wish we had something like this story on The Biggest Loser this season. We don't actually have this story with our three kids. It's one of the kids. Her mother is morbidly obese, and she's trying to change her mom, and she feels like she can't move forward unless her mom moves forward. And then another kid is, you know, his family, again, they're obese, and they've gone through bankruptcy, and they've lost everything, and they're all sort of, like, numbing out with food. And then, you know, they all kind of, there are different reasons. We don't have this one. We don't have the one chubby kid and the... And then the fit family and how the chubby kid is sort of the outside and everybody tries to fix the chubby kid. A friend of mine just emailed me yesterday. Had his sister's going through the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, she wants to send the kid to fat camp and she doesn't know what to say and she's tried everything and they're a fit family. And I was like, does the kid want to go to fat camp?
Yeah, really.
I was like, did anybody ask the kid? Is the kid start this conversation? Yes or no? And I had the same. I was like, until this kid tells you the kid wants to change, the kid wants to go to fat camp, leave this effing kid alone.
Is it because we don't think that the child is wise enough to make that kind of decision for themselves?
No, you heard her. It's because she feels like everyone thinks she's a bad parent because her kid's overweight.
Yeah.
So she feels ashamed. Like, it looks to the outside world like she's neglected her child's health or she's a bad mom because her kid's overweight. Childhood obesity is such a judgmental. Anything with kids, it's like, Jesus, people love to eat you alive. I said in an interview jokingly the other day. I wasn't joking, actually. The kid pukes all the time. So I was in an interview and it was a joke interview, but they were like, what? You know, I'm surrounded by people. It was at the TCA thing for The Biggest Loser. And they're like, what surprised you about parenthood? And I was like, I cannot believe how much a child under one throws up.
I seriously
cannot believe it.
Yeah.
I cannot believe it. And I was like, every single day I get puked on. And I mean, moms came out and like with all kinds of like, you know, you bitch. And you're like, your child's dehydrated or like you ass, the nipple's wrong or the formula's wrong. It's just like, it's just constantly what a horrible mother I am that he's throwing up. If you think I haven't had multiple conversations with the pediatrician about why the kid's spitting up, and you know, and it's like I've heard everything under the sun from like their digestive tract isn't developed to he's teething, so they swallow too much saliva and it irritates their stomach, to he's getting used to eating food from the bottle and so he gags on it, and you know, and it's like, it's just, but God forbid, I'm like, I cannot believe how much a child, and I thought I was being funny because I was like, really, I truly cannot believe it. I can't believe it. I mean, see, and I literally have comfort. I'm like, no, because I can see it start to come. And sometimes I can like distract him before he throws up. And other times I'm like, oh man. And you know, the clothes get changed, his clothes get changed. And I just thought it was like, this is my life as a parent. Like, you know, I get peed on, I get puked on, I get boogers wiped on my shirt. And you know, just what a horrible mother I am and all of this stuff. And so you think this woman's not going to be freaked out about what the world thinks because her kid's overweight? Yeah. What a horrible mom. And she must, what's she feeding that kid? And she doesn't care. It's like,
wow.
It's all about how she feels. But then when she tries to fix the problem, then the kid interprets it as she needs to be fixed.
No,
and
it makes
sense. I mean, oh my God. Like, I've told parents, like, please don't feed your kids poison. You know, it's really bad for them. It's damaging. You know, don't go to the drive-thru. Well, then every mom who goes to the drive-thru hates my guts and I'm such an elitist because they feel that I'm judging them.
Right.
Even though I'm not, I'm just trying, I'm begging you, like, find another solution. Yeah. I don't think you understand how bad this is for your kid. Mm-hmm. It's, man, this parenting stuff is brutal. And it comes with so much judgment from the world. America, it's twisted here. Like, last anecdote on this. My friend, she's French, and, you know, in France, they don't say natural childbirth, and, you know, like, it's childbirth. And if there's, she goes, I don't understand. Childbirth is childbirth. Like, you have the epidural, it's called science. It's called modern medicine. You have the epidural. And I was like, dude, it doesn't work that way here. I'm like, you've got, like, all this rhetoric and all this shenanigans, and it's called natural childbirth, where the implication is if you do anything else, it wasn't natural. Yeah. And I remember having this conversation with Heidi, who had watched all those damn videos and, you know, all the Ricky Lake and the supermodels and natural childbirth. And I knew, looking at Heidi, I was like, there's no way this kid's coming out of there naturally. There's no way you're too. She was 100 pounds when she got pregnant. He was 9 pounds when he was born. At hour 13, I was like, enough. Enough. We were inducing labor. He was a week late. She was in agony. And I'm like, no, we're getting an epidural. I'm sorry. Game over. But like, that's like American guilt. My God, yeah. God help you. You get an epidural. Well, it wasn't natural childbirth. Don't you regret it? It's unbelievable, dude. Yeah. Wow. So you want to know what it's about? That's what it's about. That's what it's about. Anyway.
My sister holds the record at the hospital where she had her children for the largest birth, natural birth.
Stop. Uh-huh. How big?
12 pounds. She holds the record.
I love that you say ew.
When I took my
sister. Just think of how painful that would be.
12 pounds. 12 pounds. He's 28 years old now. 12 pounds. And she still holds the record. And when she when my sister broke her leg and we went to the hospital, I said, my sister, holds the record here. I said, my sister, she holds the record here. Yeah.
12 pounds.
All her babies. She had four big babies, but he was the biggest. 12 pounds.
Oh, my God. Being ripped in half. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's alive today.
She's alive. I cannot believe it. Yeah. Oh, my God. Some women can do that, though. Their bodies are able to. The hips just open up, and the kid flies out of there. And
I mean, I don't know if he flew out. I don't know. But all I remember, she said when he was born, all she heard was the doctor say, Jesus.
Yeah.
And she didn't know. She was like, is he okay? Is he okay?
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
Oh, my God. I remember with Phoenix, because Phoenix for Heidi, you know, Heidi's 5 feet tall, 5'1", and she was like 95 pounds when she got pregnant. Cut to, we're now in the room, right? They're like, you know, the little curtain's up, and I'm up by her little head, and they're, you know, she's like delirious, and I'm waiting, and my mom's like, I'm talking to my mom outside on the phone before I go in, and she's like, you're going to see your son for the first time. I'm like, I'm going to see, oh, my God. And like, I think I'm going to be hysterical crying, right? So they cut in the thing, and there's blood everywhere, and I'm dying because I'm so squeamish. I can't stand blood. I'm like, okay, I'm going to hold it together. All right, it's going to be okay. So I'm waiting for them to tell me it's okay to look over the thing to see my son, and I hear them go, whoa, and I'm just like, oh, no, what's wrong? Like, what's the matter? They're like, okay, you can look. And I see this monster child. And I wasn't like, oh, my God, there's my son, or, like, weeping. I was like, what the hell is that animal? Look at that animal, because she's so small. Mm-hmm. A 9-pound child. Like, we thought he was going to be 7 pounds, and that's why he couldn't get out. He couldn't push through her hips. Or too narrow. So his whole head was smashed because they were like, the contractions were smashing him, but he couldn't get through her hips. So he has this huge knot on the top of his head. He's enormous, and he's screaming because he's just pissed.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, who is this monstrous creature? And like, boy, is he mad. And that was like, but he was.
And boy, is he big.
He was huge. I just stared at him. I was holding his little finger when I cut he was holding my finger when I cut the cord. And I was looking at this monster child. And I was like, we are in for some serious trouble.
I remember getting the picture you sent to me. And he was laying, after he was born, they laid him on Heidi's chest. And I remember thinking, I don't know if that's the angle, but the kid looks rather large.
He's enormous.
Because she's so tiny. And I'm like, right. That's a really big baby.
He's huge.
What's the angle? What's
Jillian's business partner doing lying on top of Heidi?
Yeah, I know. The 96th percentile for height
and the 90th percentile for weight. I was like, how is this possible?
No,
I know.
You gotta.
Oh, man. Beast. He's a beast. He's just a monster, that kid. I know.
Blessed are the mothers of this world.
I know. What are you going to do? Anyway.
Well, you do. You go home and see them, which is where you're going right now.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I'm off.
You're off. All right. See you next week.
Learn to fly. Learn to fly. Show the world how you try. But don't let go until you know. Until you know me. Because I can see. I can see all the things arresting me. But I control. I control.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.